Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Michael Conley, a supporter of Marco Rubio, Doug Ibindall, a supporter of Donald Trump, Anthony Cassata, a supporter of Bernie Sanders, and Heather Staines, a supporter of Hillary Clinton. Our program tonight coming to you from the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you would like to tweet me a question, it's @Dumo. And of course, you can listen and watch the show every single week, wherever you're listening around the world, at beyondthebeltway.com. As we all know, there are only 2 days to go before the important New Hampshire primary, 275 days to go before Election Day. And according to the latest polls, let's take a look at this in the Democratic primary in the Granite State of New Hampshire. This is a CNN WMUR poll. It has Democrats. It has Bernie Sanders with the big lead at 58% to Hillary Clinton's 35%. And in the Republican primary, Donald Trump maintains his lead at 33%, Marco Rubio 16%, Ted Cruz on his heels at 14%, John Kasich at 11%, and Jeb Bush at 7%. And so there's going to be a lot of movement. Like Iowa, New Hampshire is known traditionally for people who vote and make their decisions late. It's also a state where you can be a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent. So the independent vote and where they go. In fact, there's been a lot of discussion as to whether independents are going to go with Bernie Sanders, or are they going to go with Donald Trump, or could they go someplace else, maybe for John Kasich. So we have lots to talk about. We've also got two live reports coming to you from New Hampshire as the program unfolds this evening. But I want to begin with Michael Conley. And Michael, you're the head of the Rubio campaign here in the state of Illinois. And my question to you is, can you objectively, based on the debate last night, can you acknowledge that the senator had a very bad night?
Well, I'm already having a good night because the last time I was here, you called me Senator Maloney, who was a great senator in Illinois at one point. So I didn't watch the debate. I will say that from my take from others that, you know, he didn't start out well. He finished strong. I guess it just goes to show you have an expectation, or the people have an expectation, that Marco Rubio will soar above the rest because he has won all the other debates.
Will you look at a replay of the debate?
I haven't watched any of the debates. I went to one debate because I was invited to the one in Des Moines, but I have not watched them.
You routinely don't watch debates?
No. No. I know where my candidate stands. I know his background, where he comes from.
Let me make an observation, because over the last several months on this program, I've said there's three people that could be elected president: Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, and Marco Rubio. After last night, I'm not so sure.
Well, that's one person.
I think it is. Trust me, it is more than one person's assessment. But I just want to say that you probably should take a look at it, because in my view, next to the stumble of Rick Perry a few years back, this may be one of the biggest stumbles in a big debate for a long time.
I agree.
I'll say this. The debate, the mainstream media, if you will, are not fans of Marco Rubio. That I know. I've been calling people on the ground in New Hampshire this morning to get their feed on things. Okay. Marco Rubio had a breakfast this morning set for 200. 1,000 people showed up. There have been overflow crowds everywhere he's gone today. The people of New Hampshire, more than anyone, were probably watching that debate. So anecdotally,
That's okay.
Things aren't changing much.
I've never been called
a
member
ground.
Of the mainstream media before, but that's okay. Now, let's go to our Trump supporter, Doug Ibindall. Now, again, the assessment of last night was that nobody laid a glove on Trump. He's got a double-digit lead. He's probably going to keep it. But again, be analytical, if you will. How did the rest of the field do in what they had to do last night?
There was a lot of pressure on Trump, no doubt, and I think he rose above expectations. He looked the most presidential by far in the debate itself. And there was one small thing at the very beginning when they were introducing the candidates to bring them out. And there was some confusion because I guess there was because of the noise level. And Ben Carson got held up. He missed his cue.
He missed his cue.
It was a little embarrassing for him. He was standing behind the curtain. The camera was showing him. All the other candidates were announcing their names are just blowing by him. Ted Cruz, Bush. Donald Trump stayed there and stood with him. And, you know, so that he would be less embarrassed. You know, it seems like a small.
Do you think that's why he did it? Or did he also not hear the cue?
He's an attention seeker.
We
don't
have to overanalyze every single thing. I mean, it was a small thing to do, but it was an obvious thing to do, but yet he was the only one who did it. But more importantly, I would strongly encourage the Senator Connolly to go back and look at the game tapes because.
But they don't mean anything now.
Well, they do because they have a lot of people wondering today.
I want to get our Democrats.
Iowa. I know what matters. I know what moves people on the ground.
I want to let our Democrats, who may or may not have watched the debate, sort of weigh in either on what they saw or what they've gleaned from what they've read. Anthony Cassata is here. You are a student. You're an activist. Yep. And you're for Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
Did you watch the debate last night?
I did not watch the debate, but I did watch the spectacle of that introduction. Ben Carson, I don't know what his deal was, but Donald Trump was definitely going after, you know, attention. He's an attention seeker. He wants to be different. He wants to look different. And I think that was exactly his reaction to what Ben Carson.
Well, doing a nice
thing. Let's get Heather Staines involved. Heather, you're a state senator. You're for Hillary Clinton. But what did you see on the Republican side? And we're going to let the Republicans weigh in on the Democrats as well.
And yes, and I have been watching most of the debates, Republican and Democrat alike. My take has been that it really is very compelling to see how the Democrats debate versus how the Republicans debate. And the Republicans, you just see them talking over each other, talking at each other, really trying to one-up each other. The Democratic debates have been much more substantively oriented, and I think it's very telling about just sort of the nature of the personalities, or really that it's much more substantively oriented in the Democrats' field, where it is much more personality-driven in a large way.
Are the Democrats just reluctant to throw a punch? I'm going to ask that to you. People have said that Bernie Sanders might be further ahead if he didn't always pull his punch when talking about Hillary Clinton.
Well, the thing is, we need to be talking about the real issues. We don't need to be bickering over
nonsense.
Is
the integrity of the President of the United States a real important issue?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
absolutely.
So should that be talked about?
Yes, it should be. Because that can further show what that president will react in certain situations and his integrity, his or her integrity, in their future years in office. We can go back to how Hillary Clinton's integrity over the years have not proven to be the same that she's showing now. So there is a very, very huge lack of integrity on part of Secretary Clinton, I believe.
Heather.
Well, you know, I think the truth of the matter is that this is an issue that's going to continue to come up by the media primarily. I think that when you get to the substance, even Bernie said he didn't care about the emails, that this stuff just gets chalked up and is used as sound bites, I think, primarily in ways of trying to undermine the substance that Hillary Clinton's all about, quite frankly. Sure.
To those listening around the country who may have watched the debate, hopefully there's a few people out there that watched the debate last evening, I'd be most interested in who you thought used their time well. Do you agree with me that Marco Rubio stumbled badly? You may totally disagree with that. That's what this program is all about. And again, another question I would ask is, do you think that Chris Christie, by his aggressive action, did he move from back in the pack to become a serious challenger, or did he just knock off Marco Rubio, perhaps for the benefit of John Kasich? Back shortly.
Monday and Tuesday, as the campaign moves on to New Hampshire, so does Morning Joe, the place to follow the race with the best political commentary, the most insightful interviews, and where the presidential candidates stop in to get primary day rolling. Joe and Mika are live in Manchester on Morning Joe, Monday and Tuesday, 6 to 9 a.m. on MSNBC.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Want back in Chicago, and my question was, last evening, did Chris Christie help himself, or did he take one for the anti-Rubio forces by going after Rubio in a big way. Doug, what'd you think?
I think Christie definitely helped himself. I think he already has a, you know, that's close to his own, you know, Hampshire's not that far from his home state anyway. I think he helped himself a lot. I would actually, as a Trump person, I would actually even go so far to say that I've always thought that Chris Christie was really about the only worthy competitor to Trump in this whole field, except for his bridge problem. And I think if it weren't for the bridge thing, I think he would be doing much, much better, possibly, you know, very close to Trump. But I think there are too many people that are afraid to get to him. But I have to say, can I come back very
sure.
quickly to Rubio last night, since the distinguished senator did not watch the debate for his candidate, that I have never seen a candidate so rattled. It was painful to watch. And then Rubio was over-programmed by his handlers, and repeating the same line four times was very, very disturbing. Rubio's performance was so shaky last night.
Robotic.
I thought he was going to fall off of his high-heel boots. That's how shaken he was by Chris Christie.
Would you also acknowledge that politically he did make a comeback? If you want to solidify the right to life group within the Republican Party, his response on abortion was as strong as anyone's, and he was very strong on several other issues. Other than that first dust up between he and Christie.
He got back on his game.
And Bruce, to clarify the record, I was at Waterleaf. It's a pro-life organization in Aurora, Illinois, their biggest fundraiser of the year. That's where I was. I thought that was a priority for me and my wife. So, Doug, that's where I was.
It's on tape,
secondarily,
you can watch it. You can watch it on tape.
Secondarily, in Iowa this past week I was there, and between Cruz and Trump and Bush – $3,500 per man, woman, and child was spent on negative ads towards Marco Rubio.
Yeah, lots.
The largest turnout in the history of the Iowa caucuses for the Republicans by 50,000 votes, and Marco Rubio won all the last the people who changed their mind at the end. So going negative, and this is one thing. Anecdotally, I know today, this is Sunday, the 7th of February, the crowds were overwhelming.
I'd like to go back to your question, though, Bruce, because you were posing whether or not Chris Christie has been helping himself or maybe Kasich. And, you know, I'm not sure I entirely agree that he's only been helping himself. I mean, I think he does, but I think the Democratic population there in New Hampshire really tends to be a little bit more genteel. I don't think they really like all that negative view. And he came across very strongly, and I think it could almost undermine himself and really end up helping some of the other independents, particularly because Kasich really has been picking up some momentum
there. One thing I think that would say my bottom line is that he was the guard opening up the line, and the guy that was running through the line was Kasich.
Yes.
It was Kasich's best debate, without question.
By far.
I think he reached out to independents, and I think just as last week on the program I said, The second big headline, the other big headline coming out of Iowa, I said this last Sunday night, was going to be Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio was going to be the story. He turned out to be the story, as well as obviously Cruz win and Trump's side. I'm going to predict again tonight. The story on Wednesday morning, Kasich is going to end up in the top three. I think, frankly, Kasich goes to second. I would not be surprised if Rubio finishes out of the running in Iowa. I mean, not one of the top three. That's my prediction, because there's lots of volatility. Bush also had, I think, one of his best debates, but I think the downside is when I see Bush with his mother, it turns me off. I'm just...
Yeah.
And I think Cruz may be out of it as well after this.
Cruz did not stand out last night, and there have been many debates where he has not stood out. He apologized to Ben Carson, which was correct. I think his other strongest point of the whole night, and it made me for the first time ever think that Ted Cruz had a heart, was when he was telling the story of his stepsister who died of heroin overdose.
Well, Cruz,
he came across believable, and it was coming from the heart, in my view, or he was doing a brilliant job of faking it.
Cruz was clearly more humble last night. I think, you know, a lot of embarrassment being exposed with his, you know, campaign operatives, with the dishonesty on caucus night against Ben Carson. And then he also was a little bit out of his element last night in New Hampshire. You know, in Iowa, about 60% of Republican caucus goers identify themselves as evangelical. In New Hampshire on Friday, it's probably only going to be about 1 in 5. He's out of his element there. He's probably not going to do well. I think, you know, maybe he's given one more shot in South Carolina. But I think this race is going to very quickly solidify into a two-way race. Before last night and Rubio's terrible performance, I would say it was going to be Trump and Rubio. Rubio did so poorly last night, was exposed as such a lightweight. I agree with you. I think Jeb Bush may come back now, or Kasich. I think it's going to take a longer time now for the money people to decide who's going to be there, who's going to be the guy.
If we're going to sit for two segments on Marco Rubio's one debate performance, did you spend segments on how he beat the crap out of these guys in the other debates?
I did. I thought he won. That's what.
Here's what's interesting.
I thought he won every other debate.
The people need to. Here's the thing. I wasn't there. I'm not on the ground in New Hampshire. I can only relate what has been told to me. But this is emphatically clear because it's on FEC filings. Last night, Marco Rubio raised $600,000 in one night. During the debate hours.
Bernie Sanders has raised $3 million.
Marco Rubio, that's the most he's ever raised in any of these debates. So if he did so poorly, then why would people be giving money to someone who's
because he's the candidate of Wall Street.
Here's my last.
Come on.
But everybody's
your
a
guy is Wall Street.
There's only one guy.
I don't know if you know this. Your guy's Gordon Gekko.
That's better.
I think everyone on the stable's candidate is Wall Street.
One thing, well, again.
And Main Street. That's what's so great about him.
You included yourself on that one.
Ted Cruz, obviously, got a big loan from Goldman Sachs, and his wife works at Goldman Sachs. So everybody's got a little, and you know, when Kasich's time in the spotlight comes up, it'll be a heat lamp, and he's going to defend his position at Lehman Brothers. So, I mean, everybody's got a little bit of things to, when their moment comes. Last night was Rubio's moment from moving from the spotlight to the heat lamp, and he sort of melted. But here's one last point that I'm going to make about Christie, and I want to get reaction, and we have lots of callers. We're going to go to them in just a moment. My other reaction, and this was said on the shows, he did about 3 or 4 shows today. He made the point that he was, because someone had said that he was handling Marco Rubio like he was, you know, on trial. He said, I was prosecuting the case. And he said, if people want to know how I'm going to prosecute the case against Hillary Clinton, they saw what I do, and they saw what Marco Rubio did. And look ahead to the debates in October. Who do you want going up against Hillary Clinton? And you know what? For the first time in this campaign, when he said that, and I heard it 3 times today, I said, you know what? He would be a much stronger candidate because of what I saw on Saturday night than Marco Rubio.
The bottom line is
I don't know whether I'm the only one that was affected by that. But
you might be.
And he is a prosecutor.
But independent professional voters in Cuyahoga County, Ohio, and Pinellas County, Florida, will dictate who the president of the United States is.
Yes.
They've done it for the last 3 elections.
Right.
And if you think that tactic is going to sway that independent voter, I would respectfully disagree.
Okay.
On the dais, Marco Rubio coming from his background.
Great story.
His story versus Hillary Clinton making
phenomenal
$200
story.
Million dollars since they left the White House broke, I think is the clearest contrast of all the Republican candidates. And by the way, this is primary number 2. We're heading south. We're heading into the southeast where Rubio and Cruz are 1 and 2 in places like Tennessee, Arkansas, and other states.
I want to ask you a question.
Absolutely.
And then next segment we're going to calls. Your background is you are first generation.
Yes,
I am. Your parents were from?
Mexico and Costa Rica.
Okay. You come from a struggled
I'm still living in poverty.
Even though Marco Rubio is of a different party,
yes,
can you empathize with his story, his life story? Is it similar to yours?
Similar, however, the values are way, way off. I mean, Senator Rubio does not support gay marriage. I mean, he wants to bring marriage back between man and woman. I'm a gay man. Senator, would you want that president, would you want that senator to become president and strip away my pursuit of happiness and marrying someone that I love?
Is this an interrogation for me?
I'm asking you a question. I'm asking you a question about your candidate
my
that you
candidate,
support.
My candidate will appoint people to the Supreme Court who don't interpret this Constitution. They'll read it for what it is. So Senator Rubio, myself, and others, I voted no to gay marriage. Absolutely, and I vote no again.
But so Anthony, I want to stick to my question to you. Is
sure
again, similar backgrounds.
Yes,
you went left, he went right.
Right.
But the cultural similarities between yes. you and Marco Rubio, and you know a lot of people, not just Hispanic, all people vote
yes,
on cultural whether they can relate to someone. Are you, and by the way, this is one of the reasons why I think a lot of Democrats are fearful of Marco Rubio, maybe a little less so today than they were 2 days ago.
Absolutely.
But they're fearful because he can tell a story. He can tell a story about growing up and having to move around and his father losing a job and all the things that are part of his story. There's millions of people, and they're not just all Hispanics.
Of course. There are
millions of people that can relate to that story. And here's a guy who's now a United States Senator, former Speaker of the House, and now maybe within a heartbeat of the White House.
Poverty knows no limits, and what affects Senator Rubio and his views were his upbringing. He tapped into frustration and fear for his message. I'm tapping into compassion and empathy, and that is exactly what Senator Sanders is doing with this campaign as well.
Okay.
We're tapping into the working class of the United States is mad. We are mad. We are mad of the injustices and inequalities that have been pushed against us from a system. This is systemic. But now we are realizing that we have to fight these inequalities and injustices unified, not frustrated, not with hatred, but with love, compassion, and unity.
Okay, that's 1-800-723-8029. The debate has been engaged. The calls are lining up, and we will take them when we come back from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches? Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
From Ashtabula, Ohio to Austin, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. Let's go to Austin, Texas. Carl is listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Thanks, Bruce. Love your show.
Thank you.
Love the fact that you're Beyond the Beltway.
Good. Me too.
But actually, listening to you, I was kind of curious. Pushing Kasich up to the front, it was New Jersey governor who knocked Rubio off his game.
Yes, he did.
And why would we give so much credence to Kasich, who basically did the same old thing every debate?
Let me offer my Beyond the Beltway perspective. Kasich is a moderate conservative. He's certainly the most moderate in this race. His background looks that's conservative. And if you're looking at governors, in my view, he has an impressive record as a governor, more impressive than Chris Christie. And obviously Jeb Bush's record is 10, 12 years old. So Christie is a remarkable story. He's from a blue state or a swing state. He won his last election by 30 points. It's incredible. So Christie or Kasich is a guy who hasn't really stood out in these debates. He stood out the other night. And by the way, I'm going to say something else, which I've said before, and I can say it because I'm significantly overweight. I don't believe that Chris Christie will be viewed seriously by many people because he's way overweight. He's way overweight. He may make a great attorney general for somebody, but I don't think he's going to be elected president of the United States. He hasn't been on my list. And I said this long before the hug and long before everything that happened in the wake of Hurricane Sandy. I just don't think the guy has got it in a 21st century telegenic world. He's not connecting, even though he speaks from the heart and he's a bold guy. But sometimes, you know, you need the guy that can open up the line. He opened up the line last night. The guy that ran with the ball, in my view, was John Kasich. And the guy that fumbled the ball was Marco Rubio. That's my Super Bowl analysis. Go ahead.
But that's after being hit by Christie.
That's correct. I understand it. I may be totally wrong. You know what? We're all going to know. I made my prediction last week that Rubio was the story coming out of Iowa. I'm saying tonight that I think the story coming out of New Hampshire is going to be Kasich. I may be wrong, and next week I will either take a bow or acknowledge that I made a mistake. Go ahead,
Bruce. Well, I think Christie's offense, I mean, the size thing, I think that just gives him more gravitas. I don't think that's a negative for him at all. I really don't. I think the thing that hurts Christie, and I actually
not going to vote for Chris Christie.
I actually have a lot of respect for Christie. I think he is probably one of the sharpest guys in the race. I think he's got a lot of his history as a prosecutor. When he first did his first news conference about the bridge scandal, I actually wrote something in defense of him and said, you know, that was a very credible story. I don't know if I'd write that today. Now I have doubts. I think the single thing that has kept him from getting into the big tier is the bridge scandal. I think there's a lot of people who are nervous about that.
Okay. We're going to move on. Thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Doug in Hawksville, Tennessee. You want to talk about Donald Trump. Go ahead, Doug.
Yes, sir. First of all, full disclosure, I was a Rand Paul supporter. Ted Cruz is my second choice.
Okay.
Concerning the question about waterboarding, I don't know if that's been discussed
yet.
Not yet.
So you did discuss Donald Trump's answer that he'd bring back waterboarding and a lot more?
We did not discuss that. You're bringing it up, so tell us how you feel.
Well, I don't think we need to nominate somebody for president who is in favor of torture. And he made it very explicit. Apparently he was asked about this by George Stephanopoulos today on This Week.
He was.
Didn't see that, but apparently he doubled down on his answer.
He did. Doug, your reaction?
Well, my reaction is, thank you, caller. That's a fair question. I respect your point. But once again, we have Donald Trump, the expert negotiator, who knows that you don't communicate what you're going to do, and you certainly don't communicate what you're going to do to people who want to kill us. And the whole point, the reason why Donald Trump has been so successful and has accomplished so much is because you don't start with the terrorist's preferred position. You start one place and you let the bad guys keep wandering. And if the bad guys, the people who want to kill us, wondering if we're going to bring back waterboarding or something worse under President Trump, then thank goodness. I say great. And you know what? Quite frankly, if I had a loved one that was being, you know, held captive by one of these animals, I would hope that our government was doing everything they could.
I want to get Heather more in the conversation. Heather, what about?
I say great as well, because I just think this is just fuel for the fire when a Democrat against the Democrat when it comes to general election. Boy, is that clip going to get played over and over again, if he is the candidate. Bring it on.
We'll do that all day.
There's only one person on the Republican dais who is subject to and is privy to our most confidential intelligence reports. That's Senator Rubio. He's on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. And as he said last night, the last thing we should be talking about at all is intelligence matters and defense matters, tactics and whatnot. To be
that.
Having this discussion publicly is irresponsible.
And the other issue here is that, you know, just basic constitutionality of it. I mean, you talk about all these folks who hold the Constitution dear to their hearts, yet saying waterboarding and beyond that?
Look, Anthony
weighing in.
It's just wrong.
Second. I think there is a key fundamental issue with this entire situation, is that we're talking about killing. They're already committing these barbaric actions. Why are we going to, you know, practice the same actions? We have to, you know, consciously reawaken our country and our policies. We can no longer operate in barbaric times. We must move to 21st century solutions to 21st century problems. By killing people, we're not proving an example. Well, we're going to be, you know, the police of the world. We're gonna be, you know, buff and strong and take our tanks all over the Middle East. No, no, no. We need to start showing the world that we are more reasonable and we are much more compassionate than that. And by threatening people, by saying we're going to capture them and torture them and waterboard them, that is not a moral nation. That is not an America that I want to live in. And that is a nation that Bernie Sanders will change.
Okay, well, number one, I know you can criticize this, obviously. John McCain did, obviously. But the Bush Justice Department, President George W. Bush's lawyers looked at this, and they did legal opinions and said that waterboarding wasn't torture, but I don't think we need to really
legal.
I don't think
we don't need to relitigate that. But why don't we look at moral opinions? You see, we're trying to this political revolution is about a conscious revolution. It's about being a more moral nation.
No, Anthony, I respect your passion, but look, what I don't think you realize from history is that the bad guys that are out there trying to kill us,
they
kill us more the weaker we are.
The point
our words are stronger than our weapons.
There's another pragmatic issue here, too, in that I think when you put that kind of vitriol out there, all you do is encourage more people. ISIS has an easier time recruiting more folks. I mean, bottom line, when you can
isn't it red meat in a Republican primary?
It absolutely is, but you're setting yourself up, I think, for a real problem come the general election.
Ronald in North Highlands, California. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a couple quick comments. I think we have way too many media polls going on. I think maybe we should mostly let the candidates take their own polls and maybe publish their own. And also,
Do you want to restrict the right of the press to act in a free and open way? Is that what you want to do? Well, it sounds like you are saying if you were in the media, we're going to restrict your right to do your job.
Well, what I'm saying is at some point it becomes kind of manipulative. And let me just say, too, I think Trump looked the most presidential there. I think he easily did well enough to hold his huge lead. And on foreign policy, I was skeptical at first about Donald Trump, but I've come to common sense. 12 years ago, he wisely suggested don't get into Iraq and Afghanistan and so forth. The other ones, like
Are you there? We're going to move on. He's got something else. He's got something on
the
stove. John in Boise, Idaho, listening to us from the great state of Idaho. Go ahead.
Hey, Bruce.
KBOI. Go ahead.
Hey, I really dig the show.
Thank you.
I just got some comments about last night. First of all, the thing about Rubio or the thing about waterboarding, I think Rubio has tacitly all but said he would do waterboarding by saying that anybody captured would get a, quote, one-way ticket to Guantanamo and we will, quote, find out everything they know. So without coming out and saying it, I think he's pretty much said it without saying it.
I agree.
As far as the coming out on stage, I think the whole point of Trump hanging back with Carson was that he could be the last guy on stage, and he wanted to force them to make him come out so that he could be the big man at the end.
He does like attention, no doubt.
I will call Donald Trump out on a lot of stuff. What I think happened, and this is a minor thing, I think he made the same mistake that Ben Carson did. There was either the sound wasn't up back there, or someone didn't brief him as to what he's supposed to do. I think he was there, and I think he got a little bit confused. Even the moderators or the announcer got confused by bringing Kasich out.
Is this go the category of no good deed goes unpunished? I mean, the hysteria is a little out of control with Trump when he actually does something nice.
You say that the Republicans could not organize a one-car funeral? Is that what you're saying?
Well,
what happened? They can't even handle the introductions?
Well, I think there was a legitimate sound issue there. None of us are getting any younger.
No, there was.
On the hearing.
That, again, we probably have spent way too much time on it, but it was a screw up when obviously you had 13 million people watching it on ABC last night, which is considerably down from what some of the other debates have been. All right, let's talk about Hillary Clinton. I'm going to give you a quick setup on this because we're going to go to a break in a moment, but I want to hear from you, Heather, what do you think was the high point for Hillary in the debate that she had with Bernie Sanders? And also I'm going to ask Anthony the same question when we come back.
Excellent.
1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border and around the world on Beyond the Beltway. I'm Bruce Dumont live from Chicago. Don't go away.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown and is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Monday and Tuesday, as the campaign moves on to New Hampshire, so does Morning Joe, the place to follow the race with the best political commentary, the most insightful interviews, and where the presidential candidates stop in to get primary day rolling. Joe and Mika are live in Manchester on Morning Joe, Monday and Tuesday, 6 to 9 a.m. on MSNBC.
Bruce Lamont, back in Chicago. Heather Staines, you are for Hillary Clinton in the debate that, or the forum that she had with Bernie Sanders. What did you think was the highlight for her?
You know, I think generally speaking, her gravitas just shines through. I mean, she's got mastery on so many different issues, and she's so comfortable with them. I think she was also being herself now and having fun, which I think is a little bit of a change from where it's been in the couple of the first debates. I really feel like she just settled in. I think specifically on the way she talks about foreign affairs and international issues, she just wipes the floor over Bernie. And the fact that she was now acknowledging where she is with the youth vote and the way she spoke about the fact that you may not be with me, but I'll be there for you, I thought was just very genuine and really speaks about who she is.
How does she turn it around with young women, which at the moment is a huge issue for her?
Well, you know, I know we did see what Madeleine Albright's been doing out there and trying to, I think, do more than guilt
the older
factor.
Women.
But, you know, I think generally speaking, the youth do, obviously Bernie's been resonating with the youth. Listen, my own kids, I'm a Hillary delegate. My kids are with Bernie. I think ultimately I'm going to get them to Hillary. We're having those debates. But I do think he's hitting a passion. And really, when you talk about, and I think you had mentioned this a little bit a while ago, Anthony, that there is some anger out there. And I think the youth sort of resonate a lot more with the anger. I think when you get to the pragmatic, who's going to actually be able to solve problems, people come and end up back with Hillary.
Anthony, yes. You are the only bona fide young person at this table, 20 years old.
Proudly. And proud.
And, you know, and we're all
and
envious.
We're all jealous.
We're all
yeah.
envious. But my question to answer the question, what is it that Bernie is saying that is so attractive to people of your generation?
It's not about, like, just trying to be popular. We understand that Wall Street and that capitalism is a fraud. It's a fraud. It is not working for the masses. Capitalism is built on exploitation, poverty, and war. And what the youth, what the millennial generation is now understanding, and I express this to all generations, is that we should start identifying the problems with this system, that it is no longer working for the masses, and it is only working for the select few. When we have, as Bernie Sanders said, the 20 richest people of the United States holding more wealth than the bottom 150 million Americans, that's everyone in this table. We're not the 1%. I'll speak for myself, but we're not the 1%. So this system has duped you into and fooled you into believing that it's working for you, that it's identifying for you, that it's representative of you.
Heather,
and this is why Bernie's not electable, is for those kinds of reasons being articulated like that. He's playing to an extreme. He's not going to be able to pull in crossover votes. That's way outside of, I think,
you know,
when you talk about the capitalist
recession.
System being broken.
That was extreme.
Our capitalist system is not broken. It is really
not in.
There's problems with it. There is no doubt about that. Growing income inequality is, I think, clearly the most destabilizing factor that we have in this country that has to be addressed.
Heather,
it needs to be addressed within a capitalistic
sure.
society, from a
political perspective, though, when you look at the support that Sanders has with young people, they weren't called millennials then, the young people. How does what's happening now, how does it differ from what George McGovern did in 1972 when he won the Democratic nomination, obviously went down to ignominious defeat? How does it differ from what Barry Goldwater did in 1964, attracting the same type of passion from young people, drove the Republican Party, down the tubes in 1964? And how does it differ from 1968 when Eugene McCarthy, every college student in America was for Eugene McCarthy, he toppled the incumbent president of the United States, forced him not to run, and elected Richard Nixon. How does what's happening right now differ from that?
And I think that was also at play really with the Obama election, too. I think that population also had a lot to do with putting him over the top and pulling out that election as well. And, you know, I think I do believe that we got to get from the 84% of the youth who were with had been with Bernie up to date. That's going to come down. I do believe that. I think, I already see it in terms of the college students I was with last night had been with Bernie are already moving back to Hillary. They've seen, particularly in this last debate, I think sort of has helped lay the groundwork on that. But I really think that when it comes down to it, people want to be with somebody who can actually win the general election as well, and Bernie's not that candidate.
People are so quick to say, oh, look at the numbers. I mean, Hillary is a solid candidate. Whatnot. People are losing this idealism that America was built on. That's what they're losing. They're losing touch with that. And to go back, when we compare Bernie Sanders' campaign to previous, you know, very liberal and progressive campaigns, what's different now is we have a more globalized world, a more networked world, and a more informed generation.
But here's the other thing, which
I just want to
follow up on one thing. The one portion, the way I would answer that question is that in each of the cases that I articulated, the young people were much more interested in controlling the party. Sure, they might have, in an idealistic way, thought they could win. They turned out to be wrong. I think you may turn out to be wrong, Anthony, as far as whether Bernie Sanders. But, you know, it was more important for them to win the battle. And yet, I think that's the common denominator that we're talking about here. You could win the battle. You could win the battle. Bernie Sanders, I believe, could be the Democratic nominee. But I don't think he's going to be president of the United States.
I disagree. And the reason why is because there has – In recent history, and in my childhood, in my raising, in my coming up, there's never been a much more desperate time when we see the grotesque amount of income inequality, when we see the grotesque special interests from financial institutions to our political systems, to our social systems, and to our economic systems. There is an exploitation on almost every single facet of American society, and that is done through special interests by your candidate, and your candidate. It is simple.
Michael, quick question to you.
I'm learning this.
Are you worried?
We'll just let them go.
Are you worried that this prairie fire that Bernie Sanders has started could make him a viable candidate in a general election? Are you concerned about
it? I'm not concerned at all. I think he's completely unelectable. Talk about millennials. It's interesting. Bernie talks about free college tuition and all this. And I have three millennials. And one thing that draws them and their friends to Marco Rubio is Marco Rubio just finished paying off his student loans. He doesn't have a family lineage in government or in politics. His dad didn't give him $40 million to start a business. He's done everything on his own. So he relates to millennials.
Are you worried about this message?
Well, no. This is what Republicans call an admission against interest. I mean, Republicans, we would love to see Bernie Sanders be the Dem nominee. No, he can't win.
Okay. 1-800-723-8029. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago. Don't go away.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Monday and Tuesday. As the campaign moves on to New Hampshire, so does Morning Joe, the place to follow the race with the best political commentary, the most insightful interviews, and where the presidential candidates stop in to get primary day rolling. Joe and Mika are live in Manchester on Morning Joe, Monday and Tuesday, 6 to 9 a.m. on MSNBC.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Back in Chicago, and we are now going to head to New Hampshire for the first of two reports. We're going to be welcoming Chris Calderi. Chris is a professor at St. Anselm College, and Chris was with us a couple of weeks ago. Chris, nice to have you with us. I'd be very interested in your assessment of where do things stand right now from your perspective in the Granite State, in the Democratic primary, first of all.
In the Democratic primary, Bernie Sanders appears to be ahead by a considerable margin. The Clinton campaign, you know, they're putting in a good effort. They've been doing lots. She's been doing lots of events. They've been doing lots of get out the vote. But I think they're also looking past New Hampshire.
On the Republican side, we've spent this portion of our program, as did a lot of the Sunday shows, talking about Marco Rubio's perceived stumble last night. The people that you've spoken with today, what was their reaction to what they saw last night? Because they're the most important people that everybody cares about at the moment.
Yeah, and it was universally pretty negative. I think the problem Rubio ran into is that he was being attacked for something that a lot of people have worried about him about in the Republican field, the idea that he is too young, too unprepared, and as a result, he's over-scripted, over-programmed. And when he responded to that attack by going back to the same stump speeches that he'd been using previously in the debate, I think that was really bad. He's been trying to lean into that today, say he, you know, kept repeating that because he believes it so strongly and thinks it's so important. But I think this could be a real problem for him going
forward. 10 minutes ago, I asked the question, because Christie was on the offense, does Christie move up or does he just take Rubio out and perhaps offer a lane for John Kasich?
That's a really good question. I think the problem Christie's got is that he is pretty far back in the polls. If you look at the last half dozen or so surveys, you know, he's been polling down in the, you know, 6-8% range. And it's really tough to see him getting from there up to, you know, the second or really close third that he'd need to move forward. So
now we know also that the Manchester Union Leader, which is the big paper in the state, and they walk a very wide path there, they endorsed Chris Christie, and also they're sort of known legendary that it isn't just their editorial coverage or the editorial page, it's sort of their news stories. How badly have the other Republican candidates been beaten up or beaten down by the Manchester Union Leader?
The Union Leader, you know, the way it's usually described is once they endorse you, you stay endorsed, and they remind you of their endorsement throughout the campaign. On the other hand, the Jeb Bush Super PAC, for instance, has bought some sort of advertising deal. They've been putting stickers on the front page of the Union Leader for weeks, apparently. So I'm not sure, you know, how much of a difference that's going to make.
The New York Times and the Boston Globe, with large readership in New Hampshire, both have endorsed Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary and John Kasich in the Republican primary. Nationally, from conservatives, that may be viewed as the kiss of death for Kasich. How was it viewed in independent-minded New Hampshire?
Yeah, the Kasich campaign from early on has been aiming at those undeclared voters who can vote in either party's primary. So I think to that extent, the Times and the Globe endorsements are really going to help them. I think the danger for Kasich is that the kind of Republican who gets the Globe endorsement is usually the kind of Republican who becomes every Democrat's favorite Republican, and that's not necessarily a great place to be. On the other hand, you have this sort of, you know, multi-candidate pile-up fighting it out for seconds, so it's entirely possible that he might have a surprise strong showing in second place or be a really strong third on Tuesday.
Is it your assessment at the moment that the polls suggesting that Donald Trump has a double-digit lead is that that's will fairly much hold in the next 48 hours?
I think so. I mean, it's possible that the debate shake things up, but I thought Trump had a pretty good night last night. Other than the fight with Jeb Bush over eminent domain, he was really dialed back compared to where we saw him at the beginning of the campaign. I think he realizes he's sitting on a pretty sizable lead, and he didn't want to do anything to endanger it. And the other candidates are fighting it out for second, so I think Trump was more or less unscathed except for that one exchange.
So, in your view, just to summarize, so 2-3, and you know, most people don't care about 4, but in the case of if we were to extend it to that, 2, 3, and 4 at this moment in your crystal ball, they could come in any order?
I think they really can. If you look at the surveys that have been coming out, there's so the differences between whoever's in second and third and fourth place are so small that if you're looking at, say, a 500 respondent sample size, that's just, you know, 5, 10, 15 people in the sample.
On the Democratic side, do you see, as all the polls have suggested, that Hillary is well behind Bernie Sanders?
There are a handful that have showed her with a closer margin. So I think her best case scenario is to come in a surprisingly close second. And given that there are surveys showing Bernie up by, you know, 25, 30 points, I think if, you know, she only loses by 15%, she'll try to spin that as beating expectations.
Doug Ibendahl has a question. He supports Donald Trump.
Thank you, Professor. That's very informative. Now, question for you. Is it fair to say that a lot of folks in New Hampshire actually take pride in not following the lead of Iowa?
I think that's right. There's a real contrarian streak here. I don't think New Hampshire, as a political culture, has ever really come to terms with the fact that Iowa has gone first since 1972. So, you know, there are years where they go in the same direction, you know, 2004 with the Democrats, for instance. But I don't think many people in New Hampshire care what happens that much in Iowa.
Illinois State Senator Heather Staines is here. She supports Hillary Clinton. She has a comment for you as well.
Yeah, just a question. I have seen the polls, too, and it looks like Bernie's up, generally speaking, in all of them. But my sense has been that Hillary's been at least having some momentum. Are you feeling that on the ground there at all?
The Clinton campaign is certainly, you know, making a good effort here. They had Bill Clinton in doing a lot of stops this past week. Even though Hillary flew out to Flint for the day, she was back. She picked up chicken tenders at the Puritan backroom Super Bowl party. So I think they are really, you know, going to make their best effort here. But I think for them, they are waiting for Nevada and particularly South Carolina, where they'll face much more favorable electorates.
Anthony Cassata is here. He supports Bernie Sanders. Anthony?
Good evening, Professor. I saw a poll that came out before the debate showing Hillary closing in on Bernie. I believe that's because of the momentum coming out of Iowa. You know, you had the shaky kind of Democrats who weren't really feeling the burn, but, you know, getting ready for Hillary. So do you believe after the debate a couple nights ago that has shifted and now Bernie Sanders is gaining on her again and widening that gap? Because I definitely believe that he definitely put her in the ditch in that past debate.
Chris?
Yeah, I think they both had really strong debates the other night at UNH. In terms of momentum, I'm just not sure. The polls have been so variable. We've seen everything from a 7-point Bernie lead to a 30-point Bernie lead. I don't know that it's someone having momentum so much as just different pollsters asking questions very differently. I live in Concord, which is a fairly heavily Democratic area, and, you know, both campaigns have door-knocked us at least twice this weekend. So, you know, they are really both all in here.
Michael Connelly is here. He has a question for you, but again, we're going to pause. And when we come back, we're going to do another segment or take a few more questions, and also with phone calls, 1-800-723-8289. Chris Del Derry joins us. He is with St. Anselm College in New Hampshire, and we'll be back from Beyond the Beltway from Chicago shortly. Don't go away.
Tuesday. As the campaign moves on to New Hampshire, so does Morning Joe, the place to follow the race with the best political commentary, the most insightful interviews, and with a presidential candidate stop in to get primary day rolling. Joe and Mika are live in Manchester on Morning Joe, Monday and Tuesday, 6 to 9 a.m. on MSNBC.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Chris Galgeri joins us from New Hampshire. And Michael Connelly, who supports Marco Rubio, an Illinois state senator, he's here. And Chris, he has a question for you.
Okay. Professor, I have one quick question. It's more of a blocking and tackling political question. In Iowa, I was in Iowa for the last two weekends helping Senator Rubio's campaign. 130,000 is a typical turnout in a Republican caucus. We had 186,000, which was an astronomical number. It turned out a lot of them were breaking Cruz and Rubio at the end. What is the anticipated turnout in New Hampshire?
Bill Gardner's the Secretary of State here, and he's expecting the turnout to be a record, I think, 550,000. And that is pretty close to an even split between Democrats and Republicans. So a little over a quarter million for each party.
Explain what an independent means in New Hampshire and what they might do on Tuesday.
Okay, an independent in New Hampshire, officially they're called undeclared voters, which is to say they're registered voters who haven't declared an affiliation with any party. What that means is that on primary day, they go in, they tell the, you know, sign in people that they're here to vote, and then they're asked which ballot they'd like, a Democratic ballot or a Republican ballot. They can then vote and leave and remain undeclared. So Democrats can't vote in the Republican primary, and Republicans can't vote in the Democratic primary, but if you're undeclared, you can pick whichever party you want to participate in.
You know, part of the analysis of Bernie Sanders is that he's doing well because he is from the neighboring state. Mm-hmm. However, the history is that when Howard Dean was the governor of the neighboring state, he lost New Hampshire.
That's true, but he did lose it to somebody from Massachusetts, which also...
Also in the media markets. You got dueling media markets.
Yes, yes. So the western part of the state, where you've also got Keene and Hanover and a bunch of college towns, is very familiar with Sanders. They're in the Vermont media market.
How many transplanted New Yorkers? I mean, the perception as a Midwesterner is that a lot of New Yorkers may end up at some point, whether it's the summertime, in New Hampshire. So the issue of New York values, was that viewed as a negative, or are there a lot of people in New Hampshire that have New York values?
I think there are a lot of people who, you know, have moved here from New York. I don't have a specific number, but it's probably, you know, reasonably sized group. But I also think the way that Trump responded to that and bringing in September 11th, and by the time he was done, Ted Cruz was applauding for Trump's response to Ted Cruz's attack. So I don't think that hurt him here, especially because this is a...
Evangelicals are not a big slice of the pie there, are they?
That's right. In fact, a study came out in the last week or so that said New Hampshire is the least religious state in the entire union. So there are not a lot of evangelicals here.
So Trump has an opportunity
for who there is. Right. But I think he's in a position where the state is gravy. Anything he gets out of here is great. But his, you know, next big market is South Carolina.
Michael Connelly, also another question for you.
Just one quick, Professor. Would you consider the Republican primary voter – economic conservatives, libertarians, which is the biggest demographic, if you will, in the Republican primary? Obviously, social conservatives. What are the percentages? Just curious.
Yeah, I would be hard-pressed to put percentages on them. But I think here you have two things. One, you have a lot of small-L libertarian Republicans, people who might have supported Ron Paul in the past, people who like small government, strong supporters of the Second Amendment, and that sort of thing. You also have, what I always call sort of the old style Yankee mainline Republicans, who are not liberal Republicans exactly, but sort of good government Republicans, and don't necessarily have that much of a home in the National Republican Party these days.
One last question to you: do you want to put your professorial reputation on the line and give us the Republican winners 1, 2, and 3? We'll save it for posterity.
Okay. I want to warn
Democratic,
you that earlier this month I predicted in public that Hillary Clinton would win the Democratic primary.
Okay.
So know that I'm terrible at this, but I think Trump first. Let's have fun. I'm going to say Kasich in second.
Wow.
And Rubio in a very close third.
Okay. Well, I would agree with that. I think the one surprise might be is Rubio might not finish in the top three.
That would be
my big. Anyway, thank you very much, Chris Caldery from St. Anselm College. We thank you very much
for your
live report from the Granite State. And now let's head to calls. Let's go to Sam listening to us in Myrtle Beach on WRNN. Go ahead, South Carolina.
Yes, Bruce. I agree with some things your panelists have said about corruption. Our system's too rigged. We need to get rid of the cronyism. That's why I'm a Trump supporter. But I have a question for each of your Democratic people there, your Hillary supporter first. How can she support somebody? Hillary is viewed as such a dishonest person and so corrupt. How can you support somebody that people have worked in public life almost their whole lives and they've amassed a $250 million fortune?
Heather.
Well, so, first of all, I think your personal integrity is hugely important. And so I think I appreciate the question because I do think that speaks a lot to how somebody operates. I do believe that Hillary has just gone, she's been under fire constantly for many things that have nothing to do with who she is, but who her husband has been and all sorts of things. And I think what you see in Hillary is somebody who's incredibly resilient and somebody who really does know who it is she's fighting for, what it is she's fighting for, and that's been a constant throughout her career. And I believe she has operated with real personal integrity. I think this issue of the emails, you talk about it, I think the previous folks had also used personal emails. They may not have had a server in their household, and I agree that that creates a whole other layer that you got to look at. But this was not an unaccepted practice or something that other people hadn't
Senator,
done.
As someone who purports to be representing the middle class and those that need help in society, do you understand why some people find it incomprehensible to believe that someone would get $675,000? To give a speech, to give their opinions to Goldman Sachs, and that the average person would say, $675,000. What did she say that was worth that? And of that $675,000, did any of it end up going to a charity, to someone that was poor, or did it just go to an endowment for the Clinton family, not even the foundation? Do you understand why people would want to know what did she say in that speech? What's worth $675,000? It was three speeches. It wasn't one, but it was $675,000. Is that a political problem for her?
Yeah, and I do believe that every single Secretary of State has come out and made speeches and gotten paid for it. I don't know the exact amounts, but I think it's probably within that same realm. I think that's sort of
one company?
A going rate. I don't know about if it's to one company
or not. Does it bother you that it's one company?
I understand the concerns about it. I also think, though, that you can look at the record and understand that she's been doing a lot of You know, there's when you say where can you bring change from, a lot of times, you know, when I've seen it, and I've seen this happen in my own home state, Illinois, where I am, a lot of times it's the people who have connections with a particular kind of interest group and then really push against them and actually get something done against them. You see that time and time again, where it's when, you know, somebody who may at least have a relationship with big oil or whatever it is, or the banks, who can actually then bring them to the table and get something accomplished to make it better. You know, and I think Hillary's been proving that, you know, that she's fought for compensation changes for CEOs. She's fought in a lot of ways and actually been much more successful in making changes there because she's got a relationship there and can bring them along.
Anthony.
I don't think you understand the concern. This woman has been raising money ever since she got out of her Secretary of State position. She knew she wanted to run for president. She had that in her mind. The entire world knew it. So be it. Senator Sanders raised 1.8.
Second. Go ahead.
Senator Sanders has raised $1.8 million through speaking fees. Every single dollar, every single cent has gone to charities in the state of Vermont. That says a lot about integrity. When this woman is racking up her wealth, and she is part of the 1%. So for her to say that she is not part of the establishment and that she's not going to go after Wall Street or, you know, financial institutions is baloney. That is established politics 101. She is there to protect the 1% because she is the 1%. Simple as that. Bernie Sanders is not, and he will never be.
Do you see this issue as an issue that will have legs in the general election?
Which
Michael?
Is her lack of integrity?
No. This is not an integrity question. It is a judgment issue of accepting $675,000 from a company that is certainly controversial in the discussion of our economic system in the country.
I think that will be brought up in a general election. I think the alleged tie-ins between speeches from former President Clinton and then actions at the State Department.
As well as speeches by Marco Rubio, paid speeches.
That could be, but Marco Rubio's wife is not the Secretary of State of the United States. Right. I think she's going to have a difficult time explaining a real simple thing that Senator Rubio brought up the other day, explaining why she lied to the parents and families of the victims of Benghazi, saying it was as a result of a video when she knew, and she even texted Chelsea, that it was a terrorist attack. She has a difficult time with the truth.
Sam, last comment. To you, and then we got to move on.
Okay, Bruce, to your Sanders supporter there. Your parents obviously came here from, I guess, totalitarian, or your ancestors from a totalitarian third world regime. Why would you support? I don't want to see my kids grow up in a third world country, a third world sewer. Why would you support a person whose policies are almost going to lead us down that path, like Bernie Sanders? Why would you want to see America turned into that?
Okay, let's let him respond, Anthony.
Because they won't. It's simple as that. My parents escaped poverty and illiteracy, and they came to a country so that I could have a better life. And that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, I believe I'm making my parents proud, even standing here today. Thank you, Bruce, for the opportunity, by the way. What Bernie Sanders is trying to achieve through, you know, single payer healthcare and, you know, affordable and free public higher education is, you know, increasing the standard of living for you and your family and my family by making the top 1% pay their fair share. What the RNC and what the top 1% has done is committed class warfare amongst the 99%.
We got to pause. 1-800-723-8289.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Joining us now from New London, New Hampshire, is Ben Sorrow. He is a morning talk show host for WNTK, which is one of the oldest affiliates beyond the Beltway. And Ben, nice to have you with us. Great to have you with us tonight.
Oh, thank you so much, Bruce.
My question to you is this. At this moment in time, who's got momentum? What do you think is happening in the Granite State from where you sit in New London?
I'm going to be really honest with you. And we spoke back in October, and I said that the Republican nomination would be a toss-up to the minute people walk into the booth. I think it's still the same way. There's obvious momentum. I think the Kasich has got a little bit of momentum. Rubio's got the most. Trump and then obviously Cruz kind of have that front. It's kind of weird. They're the front runners, I think, but at the same time, Rubio's picking up the speed. But I still maintain this thing is going to go late into the night. It is not going to be a quick thing.
Did he run into any kind, in your opinion, based on people you spoke with today, maybe you ran into people at church, did anyone stumble or did they view that Rubio's stumble last night or perceived stumble was significant?
I'm going to go with two answers on that. Number one is no, because nobody watched it last night. It was Saturday, and even with the election going on, most people were doing other things. Number two, I think that the people who are vested into the primary, the people really into this thing, the people who are listening to us and not watching the Super Bowl right now, they've picked their people. They have chosen it.
And if you were to pick the top three right now, again, put your reputation on the line, who would the top three be at the moment?
In New Hampshire, I'm going to go with in no particular order.
No. We don't want you to name the candidate. You have. Okay, well, I don't think I'd ever want to go to a racetrack with you. Win, place, or show for the Republicans first, and then the Democrats.
Republicans. Yeah, on the Republican side, I'm going to go with Cruz at number three. I'm going to go with Trump number two, Rubio number one.
Wow. Okay, that we're going to save the tape for that. On the Democratic side, does Bernie have a lock on this, or do you think there's going to be a surprise there as well?
Bernie doesn't just have a lock on it. He's got a tiger guarding the locked booth. This is a done deal. We're a little bit different than the rest of the country. We know Bernie. He spends a lot of time in New Hampshire otherwise, not just for the presidential election. He's a known quantity, so I think that helps him a lot.
Explain to those listening and watching tonight, Ben, an issue that came up in the debate last night. It's come up in previous debates, and that is the epidemic of heroin overdoses in New Hampshire. What is going on there?
You know, I've covered this pretty heavily, and it really goes back to unfortunately, the doctors. That what you had there was a situation where doctors were overprescribing the drugs. Once they cut people off, the product's cheaper on the street. It created a vacuum down in the southern part of New England, in Boston. You could go down into New York, even though that's not New England. And they started coming up to fill that vacuum. And it's an interesting dynamic because everybody has something to say. I believe, once again, it's a vacuum situation. But I had a police chief on recently who said that loose welfare in Vermont was causing it by having women who were having children, say, in Massachusetts. They'd move to Vermont for the easy welfare. Their boyfriends who were in gangs would come up and say, man, I got an easy market here, and started to fill that vacuum that way. So everybody's got an opinion on this deal.
Is there any candidate on either side of the political aisle who has said something that you think might resonate with voters on this specific issue?
It is a big issue. I don't know if it's bigger than the economy. I don't know if it's bigger than foreign policy, terrorism, and immigration. However, I think that Carly Fiorina and Jeb Bush, because of their personal familial experiences with the opioids, has connected with the audience that wants to hear that.
Do you think Ted Cruz picked up any points last night by his very emotional description of the relationship that he had with his stepsister, who also became victim of drug overdoses?
No, I don't want to be put in a position where it seems like I'm shilling for somebody or going against somebody. Mm-hmm. But I think with Ted Cruz, he elicits very strong reactions in people. They either love him or they hate him. And I think for the people who love him, They love him more. The people who hate him, they don't care.
Now, New London, New Hampshire is very close to Lebanon, which is Dartmouth University. Is it safe to assume that Dartmouth is a hotbed of Bernie Sanders support? Or there's a lot of Republicans that go to that university as well.
Yeah, it's a I would say it's obviously big Bernie territory, but don't kid yourself. There's a lot of 1960s style liberals there. So you've got a lot of Hillary support. Some of the things that have happened, though, at Dartmouth that have been troubling is Donald Trump wanted to speak at Dartmouth and address the students. And they said, oh, no, we don't have political guests here to speak. And then right after that had Bernie and Hillary. So it's there's a little bit of double speak.
A little academic lack of academic freedom there. I want to ask our guests in Chicago to respond to this, and then I want to go back to you, Ben, to get your assessment as well. A belief has been, Heather, is that Hillary Clinton, even if she does not do well in New Hampshire, she can survive the first two the caucus in the primary because she has a firewall in the South, and it's going to be all Hillary all the way. There's no ground for Bernie. Do you agree with that assessment, or do you believe that what Bernie is talking about might have some legs and some currency well beyond what the pundits are talking about right now?
Well, I think this is a very serious race, and I think she's taking it as such. I mean, I think she went to Flint, Michigan today to shore up and sort of solidify that African-American vote that I think is so critical in South Carolina and some of the other southern states. I think she is banking on that and wants to make sure that stays true. But I think she's taken the race very seriously, and it's going to stay serious. She's already been hiring some folks here in Illinois. That's certainly down the road. I think everyone's going to take it incredibly seriously in the hurricane campaign as they should, and I think they're in it for the long haul.
Anthony.
I believe I heard that there are state reps in South Carolina, in the capital of South Carolina, who are endorsing Bernie Sanders. Her firewall in the South is going down. Her firewall on the country is going down. What I think is happening is the minority.
You hope and you think.
I think. And I hope. Yeah, I guess so. I think, you know, the minorities, are, especially the black community, is starting to identify that Bernie Sanders has stood up for them for the past 35 years. He marched with Martin Luther King. He was there. He's been part of the civil rights movement. Hillary Clinton has not. Yes, she has. She is a champion of the people. She's helped people. Great. But Bernie Sanders has a longer and more well-established, you know,
only
track
longer,
record.
Only longer because he's older. He has a there's no one can have a stronger track record on this. I mean, that's just plain factual. I mean, the Clintons have an incredible history on their support, particularly with the African-American, but also Latino communities. And I don't, I think we will be very pleased with the results that we see in South Carolina. I don't think that that's, I think the race is going to be tight everywhere. I mean, I just think that's the nature of it. I think it has become a very good race, as it should be. And quite frankly, I think Hillary does much better when it gets closer, and I think it's going to make her a much better candidate in the general election.
Also, watching the dynamic of where the support in the African-American Party is going to come from in the progressive community is that, and I think this may be an issue that will pop up, you know, when she comes to Illinois on March 15th, and that is, as both young people, Bernie Sanders went to the University of Chicago. He became involved with the Congress on Racial Equality, Civil Rights, Desegregation, all kinds of things when he was at that age. At that same time, Hillary Clinton was in Park Ridge supporting Barry Goldwater. Would you feel more comfortable knowing how she moved from a Goldwater girl to this self-described leader of progressive causes?
Well, I can tell you by the time she was getting out of law school and taking her first job, she went to work for Marion Wright Edelman at the Children Defense Fund. I mean, it was a very quick trajectory there for her, and that's where she has been spending the entire her entire career.
Are you curious about what the?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would be curious.
I would,
quite frankly, and I hope she tells a story.
I've never heard the answer.
And
to
I've
that
been
question.
Hearing her give more personal stories. I like it when she does. I think she plays well when she does that.
I like when she talks, frankly, about her mother. She becomes real. She becomes empathetic. She had a very difficult childhood, and it makes her much more real. She should do it a lot more. Anthony.
I think the Barry Goldwater kind of interning for that campaign was just another example of her integrity. You know, she did not have the mindset of civil rights at that time. Bernie Sanders did. Bernie Sanders was standing up for gay rights. He was standing up for civil rights. This man is a champion of the working class, of the people. And for Hillary Clinton to come out and say that she's been doing that longer, or that she has a much better record than Bernie Sanders does, is false, and it's very disingenuous.
Ben Sarra, last word to you. Again, you've given us your assessment of where you think things are going to turn out. Dixville Notch will be the first place we will all know actually late tomorrow night. How accurate have they been in picking the winner of the New Hampshire primary and in either party?
That one I don't know. I couldn't answer that one. But I do want to just throw one thing out there. When you think about a lot of the issues that face New Hampshire, think about Vermont for a second, because I also cover Vermont politics. Mm-hmm. Vermont is facing a $70 to $100 million or a $700 million shortfall going into this legislative session. They have 600,000 people. They have a heroin crisis. The roads are falling apart. I can go on and on. People are leaving. Young people are fleeing Vermont faster than any other demographic. So what's going on in Vermont that makes Bernie Sanders people say, I want that for the rest of the country?
Ben Sarra, we got to say farewell to you. Thank you very much. And thank you all for our guests this evening. I'm Bruce Dumont from Coast to Coast and Border to Border. We hope you all be back next week. And for those listening on radio, back shortly.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Monday and Tuesday, as the campaign moves on to New Hampshire, so does Morning Joe, the place to follow the race with the best political commentary, the most insightful interviews, and where the presidential candidates stop in to get primary day rolling. Joe and Mika are live in Manchester on Morning Joe, Monday and Tuesday, 6 to 9 a.m. on MSNBC.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. One more segment to go. Let's go to beautiful Santa Fe, New Mexico. Michael, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just would like to make a statement that Hillary's political career has been clouded in mystery and doubt since her missing billing records for the Whitewater land deal to her recent private server with that had top secret information on it in her home in Chappaquiddick, not Chappaquiddick, in New York, in upstate New York. And the fact that 18 months before she announced for her presidential run, she made 100 speeches to private corporations and made $21.6 million doing that. She did that in 18 months. And many news organizations have been trying to get transcripts of those speeches, and to date, not one bit of information about what those speeches were about has been given. The two times she's been asked about it, her response was, "I'll see what I can do."
She now, did say, by the way, if you didn't see her on TV today, she said this morning that she thought that other candidates, if it was going to be a standard for her, it should be a standard for other candidates, that they should be released the transcript of her. That was her response today.
Well, that's silly. I mean, well, she's running for the president of the United States. So if other candidates want to release them, she's been specifically asked the question by news outlets.
All right, let's let Heather respond. Heather Staines is here. She's supporting Hillary. We'll let her respond to the question.
Right, and yet I agree. There's been things going back from the Whitewater back when her husband was president, and yet here Hillary still stands. I mean, nothing. What we find is that there's no there in all of this. I mean, I think a lot of this ends up being the media creating lots of uproar around the Clintons that's ongoing. I do think that there should be an equal standard. If you're going to print out speeches for everybody, we should print them out from everybody. What I think really matters here, though, and I don't think this is what people are going to want to be making their decision on who their next president should be. It comes down to who is really going to be doing the right thing to help grow the economy and reduce income inequality in this country and keep Americans safe. And when you look at the panoply of the issues, that she's got a real gravitas, real understanding, real ability to get things done. I think she's heads above any of the other candidates on both sides of the equation here.
Absolutely fraudulent. If she wants to prove a point, she would release her transcripts first. Why does she have to wait for anyone? You know why it's political strategy. The only reason why she's saying that is because she knows that everyone else won't do that. So by them not doing it, she won't do it. Thus getting away with taking money from huge financial institutions and not showing her real special interests behind them. Simple as that.
Amongst millennials, and that's who you're 20 years old for those people who just tuned in. How important is this specific issue to them?
Well, I think it's very important because I believe my
generation.
What
about the email? What about the emails? How important?
Again, I believe it is important to the sense that if she were to be elected president, how would she go about, you know, operating in a responsible manner?
What about Benghazi?
Again, how would she react in a responsible manner? My generation is becoming a much more well-informed generation than generations prior. That is through technology and globalization. We understand that. However, what I will say is that when it comes to speaking fees, you know, like and her transcripts, that all goes down to campaign finance reform, and that should be a concern to every single American.
Is this an issue that Donald Trump will run with?
On
the speaking fees.
Yes, it is. I don't think it appeals to a broad section, certainly to the Bernie Sanders supporters, folks. Look, I think the Democrats have a big problem. I mean, with all due respect to Senator Staines, Hillary is a flawed candidate. I mean, she's head and shoulders. At least she would give Donald Trump we'd have a real contest for November. It would be interesting, at least. But quite frankly,
think it would be more interested with Bernie Sanders?
Well, it'd be interesting for a different way. I mean,
there are polls that suggest that Bernie Sanders would beat her.
Right, because it wouldn't be a contest. Him. We'd landslide that entire election.
That's crazy talk.
That's actually a Wall Street Journal poll. It was a Wall Street Journal.
Bernie
Sanders was defeating Trump by, I believe, 15
points. Bernie is adorable. He's a big cuddle. Teddy bear.
He's a Vermont teddy bear.
That's nonsense. That's the kind of poll that people say in
January. Democratic socialist. That's much more important.
When people start focusing and know that it becomes real, no way.
Of course, because I don't think he could.
As a Republican, I would be much more worried right now.
Think you're,
if Heather Staines was on the ballot for the Democrat, I'm totally serious. I'm totally serious. But Hillary and Bernie, no way.
I'm going to say to you, Doug, which I said when you were here the first time you were here about a couple of months ago. Those Democrats who are cheering for Donald Trump to be the nominee could rue the day.
Exactly.
And I will say the same thing. Those Republicans that are cheering and hoping that Bernie Sanders is going to be the easiest, you will rue that. Because you know what? The one thing that no party wants, they don't want huge turnouts. They don't want a huge turnout of people that they don't know how they're going to vote. And Donald Trump is hitting an issue. Bernie Sanders is hitting an issue.
But to some cases,
they're hitting the same points.
Yeah, but Bernie's – I would agree with that. But Bernie's not attracting nearly – isn't reaching out and attracting people from a broad demographic like Donald Trump is. Donald Trump is attracting new people.
We don't know that.
No, we do.
Michael.
Getting back to the original point, and I agree with Doug, I think Hillary Clinton is flawed. I think she's got real problems, and we can gloss over, some may gloss over the email situation. That's a federal investigation. That is nothing. Ask General Petraeus what happens at the end of these types of investigations.
Are you worried
about
that?
There's serious things clouding her campaign.
You have less
right
than
now.
A minute to go.
I think that at this point we would have heard more about that if that was going to be real. I do think it's going to be a campaign issue, undoubtedly. I also think that everybody's worst nightmare here would be, or from the Republican side, they would love to have Bernie be the candidate. I mean, I think that we're hearing that. I think that tends to be the case.
On that note, I have to say, Senator Heather Staines, you are supporting Hillary Clinton. Thank you very much for being. Doug Ibendahl, you've been here. You support Donald Trump. On the other side of the table this evening, we've had Anthony Cassata, you making your maiden voyage tonight, a supporter of Bernie Sanders, and Michael Connelly, state senator also. He is one of the leaders in the state for Marco Rubio. Folks, thank you very much. This is a Genevieve production, produced in association with WCBGO Radio. Until next week, good night from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Monday and Tuesday, as the campaign moves on to New Hampshire, so does Morning Joe, the place to follow the race with the best political commentary, the most insightful interviews, and where the presidential candidates stop in to get primary day rolling. Joe and Mika are live in Manchester on Morning Joe, Monday and Tuesday, 6 to 9 a.m. on MSNBC.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.